The Guardian.
Hello, I'm Nick Watt, and welcome to Politics Weekly. Well, we can report that Gordon Brown is still standing. Yes, after Labour's worst local election results in 40 years, the Prime Minister made it to the Commons this week. Sitting directly opposite him on the Tory benches was the biggest victor in those elections, the new London Mayor, Boris Johnson. David Cameron relished the opportunity.
People expressed their view on the choice last week. Yeah. The Prime Minister talks about salesmanship. We all know his brilliant salesmanship. This is the man that sold gold at the bottom of the market. That's the problem with the Prime Minister. He's got nothing to sell and he's useless at selling it.
We'll be asking whether Gordon Brown will ever recover from such a big electoral setback. We'll also be discussing a new difficulty for the Prime Minister in his own backyard, after the unilateral declaration by the leader of the Labour Party in Scotland that she now favours a referendum on independence. We'll be hearing from the Scottish First Minister Alex Salmond and from the Work and Pension Secretary James Purnell on the future for Labour. Joining me to discuss these matters is Sundar Katwala, the General Secretary of the Fabian Society, who has been warning for months that Labour is failing to get its message across. Hello, Sundar.
Hi.
We have Polly Toynbee, the Guardian columnist, who wrote a gloomy column this week on Labour's future. Hello, Polly.
Hello.
And finally, we are joined by Julian Glover, the Guardian's chief leader writer, whose recent claim to fame is that he interviewed the former Chancellor, Lord Lawson. Hello, Julian.
Hello.
Well, we asked Simon Hoggett, the Guardian's parliamentary sketch writer, to describe the scenes in the Commons when Gordon Brown found himself face to face with the new Mayor of London, Boris Johnson.
Well, Boris was cheered in, and Gordon Brown arrived shortly afterwards, and he was cheered in by his side, and it's not hard to work out which was the most sincere cheer. Gordon Brown found it in himself to congratulate Boris and to welcome him back to the chamber. He won't be here for very long. He's stepping down as an MP for Henley. But there's a certain gritted teeth about the whole event, mainly because Tory MPs had clearly been told that it was time to tell Gordon Brown that he would be gone very, very soon and to find inventive new ways of saying it, no doubt many of them provided by the whips.
As the Right Honourable Gentleman is the only person in the House with experience of unseating a sitting Prime Minister, what is his own estimate as to how long he's got?
That was the very first question of the day. Gordon Brown responded, as he always does, by saying, oh, you're ignoring the important things, the big policy questions. We have the highest employment in history. We've been tackling poverty. We've spent two times as much on health as we did before. We have the finest education results in history. Basically, he depicts a kind of nirvana, a blessed land which used to exist in this country. As it happens, up till about a year ago, when, of course, he became Prime Minister. Still, nobody actually said that.
The Prime Minister said he would listen and lead. So let me start with an issue of leadership. Labour's leader in Scotland, Wendy Alexander, says there should be a referendum now on Scottish independence.
David Cameron launched in then. He wanted to know about the decision by Labour's leader in Scotland, Wendy Alexander, to have a referendum on Scottish independence. The idea is to lance the boil, as we say in the trade. In fact, Gordon Brown has been somewhat evasive about this and clearly isn't very happy about it. He said that it would be at some time in the future, but it wasn't fixed yet. David Cameron said the Prime Minister is losing touch with reality. And I've noticed this recently. One of Mr. Cameron's main themes is that the Prime Minister, Gordon Brown, is going slightly mad. He can't actually say it, but he's been hinting at it. It's what we call a dog whistle, something that you only can hear if you're really listening out for it. But
I think the Prime Minister is losing touch with reality. Yeah. This is what Wendy Alexander said. I don't fear the verdict of the Scottish people, she told BBC Scotland on Sunday. Bring it on. What else could that possibly mean? So can I ask him again? Does he agree with Wendy Alexander or not? It's not much leadership if no one's really following him.
And so Gordon Brown limped away. It wasn't the worst mauling he's had at Prime Minister's Question Time. On the other hand, it came at the very worst time. Labour MPs are pretty miserable. They don't know where to turn. They don't know what's going to happen. And that's reflected, I think, in the muddle and mess of Prime Minister's Question Time.
That was Simon Hoggett. We'll be talking about those exchanges on Scotland later. But first, Sundar, isn't it all looking a little tricky for the Prime Minister? The Tories have achieved what they're calling the golden hat-trick. That's victory for Boris in London, more than 40% of the vote in the local elections, and a gain of more than 200 seats.
Well, Labour got thumped, so there's no point in pretending that didn't happen. What Gordon Brown has to do now, and the government has to do, is realise they're the underdogs at the next election, and to realise that their only hope is if the next election is not a referendum on the government, but is a choice between a Labour government and a Conservative government. And that means putting out a strong Labour argument and testing David Cameron to see whether, if challenged on policy around the progressive rhetoric he puts up, whether he'll follow a Labour agenda as he often does.
So, Polly, Sundar's saying that Labour got thumped and that they need to be seen as the underdog, but isn't the problem with Labour is that they're thumping the underdog? The reason why they're in such trouble, isn't it, is Gordon Brown's last budget as Chancellor last year, abolition of the 10p starting rate of tax hitting 5.3 million households.
Yep, the 10p was a terrible political error, particularly bad for Gordon Brown because it hit all his strongest points, you know, that he's a competent chancellor, knows what he's up to when he made that decision. Also, that he cares about the poor, which he does. You know, as a chancellor, he has directed huge amounts of money towards the poorest. This is a relatively small cutback, very painful, but as a totem, it means that on every doorstep, every Conservative and Lib Dem candidate could say, look, he doesn't even care about the poor. Look what he did to the 10p tax band. So it's an absolutely tragic error. Doesn't really signify what he's about. Great shame, but terrible mistake.
Now, Julian, you are the Guardian's polling guru. Tell us, is there any way that Gordon Brown can come back from this sort of defeat in the local elections and win a general election?
Well, there is. I think there's two things you could do. One is to say, can Gordon Brown come back? And we can talk about the Prime Minister and his response. And the other is Labour. I mean, Labour could win the next election. We've got into a very strange mindset to think that Labour is in a position where victory is almost impossible. Labour has a reasonably large majority in the House of Commons, historically quite a strong one. Tory party is historically at a very low level. The Tories have to win a huge number of seats to form a government. Labour might lose its majority and still stay in power. That looks a lot more likely. So Labour could win. They mustn't go into the election, I think, thinking that they're the underdog is a mistake. I think they need to think that they are the future. They need to be much more confident about that. As for Gordon Brown, that's a slightly different issue. I'm not saying that changing Gordon Brown would help Labour's prospects, but I think his confidence, his strategy, is slightly different from what the party needs. He does need to lead. He needs to show he's standing for something strong, as Sundar says, a Labour agenda, or at least an agenda of some sort. It doesn't really matter whose agenda it is. He just needs one. And at the moment, I think we've looked at the responses out of the local elections, and as far as I could tell, he's re-scrapped the bin tax he's already scrapped, and he's ignored his own very sensible committee on cannabis. Those two things don't feel like a strong Labour agenda taking the fight to the Tories. They feel like a bit of panic.
Sundar.
Well, you didn't want, I think, a relaunch, a reshuffle the day after. That isn't how you do it. People know things have to change. Julian's right. 2 years is a long time in politics. Think of how Bill Clinton got thumped in those 1994 midterm elections and had to say the president is still relevant. My favourite underdog fight back was Harry Truman, written off entirely by the media. He took the fight to the Republicans. He stood on his agenda and he came through because he fought for what he believed in. And Gordon Brown's got 2 years as Prime Minister to fight for what he believes in. That's also the way to win.
It may not really be underdog. It may be recapturing some of that sense of being an insurgent, of saying, right, we regroup, not relaunch, and we push forward with our own very distinctive agenda. But as Julian says, you know, there's nothing distinctive about panicking every time Gordon Brown picks up a copy of the Daily Mail and decides to do mean, stupid things like cutting back on prisoners' pay. He really needs to concentrate on three big things, Labour things, areas where the Tories can't go, and hammer them day after day and let people choose. Do they want a Tory Britain or a Labour Britain? There's no good producing kind of mishmash in the middle of sort of Labour doing a Tory agenda.
If you talk to Tories, they're slightly shocked at the moment because they say it's all going much too easily. They remember September when they thought it was pretty much all over. Suddenly, not even a year after that, it's going very well for them. And they're sort of occupying the territory, and they're slightly suspicious because nobody's fighting back. They're sort of storming into an empty town and waiting for the sort of shots to fire from the window. Nothing's happening. They're just not being taken on by Labour. It's extraordinary.
But Sundar, can I just ask you, Julian earlier was saying in his very diplomatic way, as we'd expect, the chief leader writer of The Guardian, that Labour can come back and that maybe things are not completely disastrous for Labour, but there is potentially a problem with Gordon Brown. Do you think that Labour's position would be strengthened if Gordon Brown were to go and we were to get a new generation of leadership in?
I don't. I don't think you can just keep changing Prime Minister every 5 minutes. And I put the chance of it happening as zero. So I think you need a really big debate about the direction of the party. But Gordon Brown is the leader and he'll have to lead this agenda. The only way to get a challenge would be to have, I think, an Alan Milburn, John McDonnell alliance. I don't quite see it happening.
Probably not going to happen. No, well, look, thanks for that. Well, James Parnell, the Work and Pensions Secretary, spoke to the Fabian Society this week and talked about how Labour could win the next general election. I spoke to him after his speech and brought up that article by Polly. Is this not a change moment? I mean, it was very interesting in The Guardian. Polly Toynbee had a column praising your speech, saying very good, but basically saying this is a change moment and this government looks like a beached whale.
Yeah, I mean, I like one bit of Polly's article more than the other bit. I think she's been too pessimistic on the on that big debate about ideas, because actually I think, you know, the ideas are going in a progressive direction. You look at the election in America, you know, all of the candidates moving in a progressive direction. You look at the debate here, the Tories having to come onto our ground. And, you know, clearly those were, you know, as I said in my speech, it was a grim night, it was a grim weekend. But actually, we need to get up off the floor, we need to fight back, because we have got the ideas on our side. And, you know, that very fact of having shifted the ideological centre of gravity is something that should give us confidence and move on to the next set of ideas, you know, set the Tories a new challenge. And that's exactly what I was trying to do today, talking about, you know, the next steps that we need to take on child poverty.
Polly, you are charged by a member of the cabinet with being too pessimistic. What do you think of what James was saying there, is that Labour is still dominating the battle of ideas?
Well, if you're a cabinet minister, you've got to keep whistling in the dark. If they don't whistle in the dark, they've really had it. I hope to goodness that in their private consultations, they realise what a hole they're in. Of course, in public, they have to be confident that the ideas are on their side. I mean, I happen to think they have got the ideas on their side, and what you're getting on the Tory side is simply filling the vacuum that Labour has made in politics just at the moment. But I'm not all that optimistic. There was a cabinet meeting this week at which it seems that a lot of people went into that meeting expecting to have an intense conversation about, fundamental conversation about direction, and sort of ended up not having it. And they really need to have that discussion.
Now, Sundar, as General Secretary of the Fabian Society, you are basically the ideas factory, the intellectual backbone of this government. There's Polly saying not a great discussion in cabinet this week. What's going on?
Well, obviously, we don't get to go to cabinet, but we do get to have the debate outside. And we are winning on ideas, which is no good if you lose on politics. But the Conservative Party isn't saying we care about relative poverty because they want to. They're saying it because they think they have to. And this is the danger for David Cameron, because if his own party, the hares against his tortoise strategy, say, well, they like us now, throw some red meat and we'll really win. His analysis is they like them because they're offering to run on Labour's next manifesto, essentially. So we should make it as difficult a Labour manifesto for the Tory leader to pretend he supports as is possible.
Julian, you were saying earlier that the Tories can't quite believe their luck. But what do you say about what Sundar's saying there, which is essentially the essential charge against David Cameron, is that you're doing a mini-me of the Labour Party?
Oh, I love this. I mean, there's two things problem with Labour. One is this need for a battle of big ideas. I mean, they've been in power for a decade. If they don't have a big idea by now, they're never going to find one. Certainly no need for new ideas. They need a bit of decent leadership and backbone at number 10. But the other is, I think the fundamental problem this government and the Labour Party needs to decide right now, instantly, is what they think of the Tories. There are two versions of events, and they're contradictory. And it's just like the Labour Party and the Conservative Party in the 1990s, when the Tories never worked out what New Labour was and lost twice as a result. The Tory party could be a far-right, nasty beast. Boris Johnson could be about to abolish all sorts of terrible things. And it may be true. And there are lots of Tories like that. And it's what's wrong with the Tory party. Or they can be mini-me showmen, just like Labour, trying to promise the same policies. I don't think they can be the same thing at the same time. And Labour keeps trying to tell the voters that they are the same thing at the same time. They're both far-right and vacuous. That's contradictory. As for David Cameron following Labour on the battle of ideas, well, he has adopted some Labour things, just as the Labour Party adopted an awful lot of Conservative things. That's the essence of centre-ground politics. But I think right now, Labour's kidding itself a bit if it thinks the Tory party is only appealing to the public as a kind of not-Labour option. A bit of that's true. I think the Conservative Party is beginning to feel quite confident about questioning aspects of the state and of the size of state spending, and that will filter through to policy. Now, Labour will paint that as cuts and as right-wing wringery, and it may not appeal to the electorate. But I think Labour needs to think what it really thinks about the Tories, not just dismiss it. There's a lot of glib remarks about a party that's getting 20 points more in the polls than they are.
But it's very difficult to know about the Tories because they haven't revealed yet what they are. Until we see the colour of their policies, we won't really know which way they're really facing, because in the end, politics comes down to money, and until you see a manifesto budget, you don't know where their priorities really lie. So
but
it is quite difficult to know whether this
Tory
is a cover.
They're
also
doing
the Tory party
split. Part of that's deliberate, and the Tory party would smile to hear you say that and say, exactly, that's our strategy working. I think Labour needs to decide now. It can't wait till the manifesto. As for the money, yeah, there's a big problem on that, but that affects all parties.
Sundar, can I ask you, in his last speech to the Labour Party in 2006, Tony Blair said, if we can't take apart this crowd, i.e. the Conservatives, we shouldn't be in politics. Quite damning, isn't it? Because Gordon Brown is absolutely failing that test, isn't he?
Well, let's go for it. But Julian is right about that choice of how to define them. I'll tell you what the answer is. They're Conservatives. They hold those beliefs and they'll wear them as lightly as is necessary to get into power. They will accept what is done and they will not go any further. So Labour can do more in 2 years in government than the Tories would plan to do in their first term in two terms. And that will actually also decide what sort of legacy we get and what sort of Conservative Party we get.
But Julian, isn't that exactly what Michael Heseltine said about Labour in the mid-1990s? They're still Labour, they're still socialists. And as you were saying, they had changed.
Yeah, well, I think the Tory Party are still Conservatives. And, you know, Labour should decide that and should stick with it. But I think that they can't say they're also just like us and just showmen. But, you know, as Cameron said, better at PR than being PM. The Conservative Party is fairly rooted in its beliefs, and David Cameron is inherently in that tradition. He's about as conservative as you can get, and we know all the Eton stuff. But Labour doesn't seem to be saying that very much. Brown in the House of Commons was mocking Cameron for being a PR man, not for being on the right. He needs to decide and stick with that message. And they can't wait. They have to do it soon. And it is the problem that inside the Tory party in the mid-90s, some people said, Labour's a load of socialists, you know, new Labour, new danger. They're just going to take over country and then suddenly they'll nationalise everything. Other people said, Tony Blair's Bambi. Well, it turned out he wasn't either, but he was something quite strange and quite different. But they did need to make their mind up, and their whole message before that election was confused, and the public just turned away from it. And the same may happen if they don't clarify now.
Polly, can I just ask you, some people are saying, yes, David Cameron is doing very well, but one danger for him is that he's developing a bit of a swagger in the House of Commons. I mean, at Prime Minister's Questions this week, he joked about the Prime Minister's makeup. Now, when you think of Tony Blair and the way he took on John Major in the mid-1990s, he had a few devastating lines, weak, 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 I leave my party, you follow yours. But he did sort of look statesmanlike. What do you think about Cameron on that front?
I didn't think Cameron did very well this week because he had an open goal, and Labour backbenchers were sort of sitting there watching through their fingers, expecting a mighty car crash or something horrible. Actually, I thought Brown stood up very well. Often politicians are at their best when their back's up against the wall. And I thought that Cameron capered about and looked quite silly. And the whole thing about, you know, looking at Barbara Cartland and makeup, well, I couldn't remember anything about Brown wearing lots of makeup. I had no idea what people complain on the whole, he doesn't wear enough. I don't think he really landed any blows whatever. I think it was all skittish, you know, Oxbridge debating society stuff.
Julian, you're nodding.
I think that's true. I think there's a problem with Cameron at Prime Minister's Questions now, and I think he sort of knows it, that it's too tempting to do the Punch and Judy. You come in with all the jokes cooked up in the morning by George and all the team, and he reads them out. So yesterday, I thought, we'll talk about the Scottish thing, but I thought that was quite an interesting moment when Brown said something contradictory. Cameron didn't stick with it. He didn't press Brown repeatedly. He didn't read more quotes from Wendy Alexander. He moved on to sort of jokes about Barbara Cartland, as Polly says. And that, you just thought, well, OK, it's all very clever, but really, why don't you ask some serious questions? And I think he does know that he needs to change. Brown's response is quite solid, and he was pretty solid at PMQs yesterday, is just to keep saying this government stands for big things and you don't.
Well, just as Gordon Brown hoped to put those miserable elections behind him, he found another challenge in his own backyard. Wendy Alexander, the Labour leader in Scotland, ripped up the party's policy on independence by saying she now supported an immediate referendum on whether Scotland should remain in the UK. She would campaign to maintain the union, and her change of policy is designed to wrongfoot the SNP, as she said this week.
This weekend marked the first anniversary of the SNP in power. I believe that the uncertainty has been damaging to Scotland around Scotland's constitutional future. I believe that we should get on with the issue. We should let Scotland decide. There's enough of the huff, the puff and the bluff. The issue's been around for 30 years and we should not be debating it for another 3 years.
That was Wendy Alexander. Alex Salmond, the SNP leader and Scottish First Minister, is crowing because he says that Labour has endorsed his big idea, a referendum on independence. He told Severin Carell, our Scottish correspondent, of his joy that Labour had endorsed his flagship policy.
We're already getting the Labour Party to dance to an SNP jig over the last few days, as far as I can see. But what I've said about a situation of a balanced parliament, which would be my preference, because I think that would be maximise Scotland's ability to influence in the next term of the Westminster government, is that we wouldn't form a coalition with Labour or Tory, that we would judge policies as they came forward by the minority administration of the day, and that we would seek to extend Scotland's influence as each and one of these policies came forward, or close votes came up, or whatever was happening. That way, I think, you can maximise your influence. Now, from the other side of the equation, you know, as a leader of a minority government in Scotland, I think I probably have to live with the minority government more experience of it than any other governmental figure in these islands. So I'm well acquainted with what you can and can't do, and I'm also well acquainted how to use that ability, or, as I put it, to make Westminster dance to a Scottish jig.
Julian, The Guardian has pronounced on this matter. Tell us what we think.
Well, I think the problem is that there are now two policies. Wendy Alexander, I think, was very brave this week and perhaps did something that will get her ahead of the curve in Scottish politics, which is to say we should just have a referendum on independence, yes, no. And everybody knows, the polls show it, that Scotland would stay in the Union, and that would cause a bit of trouble for the SNP. The problem with that is she seems to have got her lines crossed a bit with Downing Street, where Gordon Brown, who is nominally the head of the Scottish Labour Party and Labour in Scotland, absolutely hates the idea. There was a lot of briefing about Wendy having done terribly bad things by jumping in. And then at Prime Minister's Questions, he simply denied that's what she'd said. And the trouble is there are lots of quotes like the one we've just heard. And you do wonder, sort of, they all do say now, really. She may not have used the word now, but in every phrase she said, get on with it. She said, let's have a referendum now. And that's presumably Labour's policy in Scotland. And it's a bit awkward if the Prime Minister doesn't agree with it. And it just makes the SNP look statesmanlike. And, you know, Alex Salmond, who's the canniest politician in Britain and can exploit any weakness, will no doubt do so. He's very happy with it. So it's not great.
Polly, can I ask you, this is obviously a very big moment in Scotland to have what will soon be again and was the largest party in Scotland now supporting a referendum on independence. But what does this say for the UK? Julian is saying there that it appears that there's been some breakdown of communication between the Prime Minister and Wendy Alexander, who is supposedly a member of his inner circle. We have Wendy Alexander very clearly saying, I want a referendum now, bring it on. And Gordon Brown telling the House of Commons that she didn't say that. What's going on here?
Wendy Alexander's played a blinder, I think, because if she's trying both to save the Labour Party in Scotland and to save the Union, this is the best way to do it. If she fears, as many do, that there may be a Tory party in power in Westminster within a couple of years, that's the time when the SNP will, you know, straight after an election, the shock of that, will go for their referendum and might win it. If you go for a referendum now, I think it's much easier to win. I also think, for the sake of saving her own neck, that actually distancing herself from Gordon Brown in Westminster is a good thing. I don't mean because it's Gordon Brown, but just in general, you've got to be a proper Scottish Labour Party, and if you have differences with what's going on in Westminster, so be it.
That's interesting, Sundar, isn't it? Because here in London, we're saying, doesn't this look absolutely dreadful? The Scottish Prime Minister of the United Kingdom is unable to control the Labour Party in Scotland. That's bad. But actually, we've got devolution. It's a different settlement. And maybe that's a good thing that there are disagreements.
Well, I agree about that because Gordon Brown needs Scottish Labour to do well. And Scottish Labour won't do well if it's a fiefdom run out of Downing Street. So I think Wendy Alexander did have to do this. Otherwise, Alex Salmond, very good politician, sets the agenda. We've got to explain that. We've got to find out what the English want. If the English told us what they want, they ought to be able to have it. I think they want a greater cultural sense of Englishness more than they want more parliaments all over the place. But we also need now, I think, to have a campaign to stay British. I want to stay British. If we convince Scottish people and English people to do that, then we can. And I think we need a campaign perhaps in Scotland among business leaders and so on, say, this is the sort of question you ask once every 25, once every 30 years. Let's decide it now and then put it off. And then the SNP, if they lose it, can be an alternative party of a devolved Scotland.
That's fine. It's just not what the Prime Minister's saying. And there is, it's great to have separation between the Scottish Labour Party and Downing Street on all sorts of policies, and there has been for a long time. And when they were in government, in coalition government, they pursued different policies, and nobody questioned that. The trouble is, the Prime Minister is Scottish, constitutional matters are reserved to Westminster, and he didn't simply say, I wasn't told, or this isn't a matter for me, or, you know, I don't agree with it, but that's what Wendy says, and it's her choice, all of which are fine. He simply said, that's not what she said, which, you know, since it was, is a bit strange.
But Polly, isn't that an interesting point that Julian's making there, that Gordon Brown is in a difficult position here? Because if he were to say yes to what Wendy Alexander has said, then that would raise pretty serious questions about one of his big selling themes, which is this idea of we should be flying flags in our gardens and saying how wonderful it is to be British.
Well, I think it gives him a great opportunity, a referendum like that, to stamp around Scotland saying British, British, British. It's very much one of the reasons why he's been developing that theme. I don't think it's gone anywhere. I don't think it's got legs at the moment. But it certainly would if there was a real chance of breaking of the union.
And I agree with that. And there's a challenge here for the Tories and David Cameron as well, because devolution was very necessary after 1992 because the Tories were too English nationalist. So we had to do it to save the union. Now, there'll be tactical advantage in playing some tactical games with Alex Salmond if you're the English Tories. But we need the Tories to be sincerely unionist. But Gordon Brown can go and lead the argument to keep us British and settle the question.
I agree with that. There is a challenge for the Tories, but I think it's too late. I mean, you ask what the people of England want, well, mildly, they quite like an independent Scotland, and polls show that support for Scottish independence is bigger in England than it is in Scotland. The Tory party, I think quite a while ago, ceased to be an effective unionist party in anything but name. David Cameron is a unionist, but I wonder whether many other people in his party are. Tories would love an independent Scotland, and that's the danger, and that's why it might happen, and it would be quite sad.
Because they, of course, one shouldn't forget the Conservatives did actually win the general election in England last time, didn't they?
They got substantially more votes. They didn't get more seats.
No, but they got 90,000 more votes.
Yeah.
But Sundar, you've now wrapped yourself in a union flag and you're going to fight for the union. But isn't the union between England and Scotland, it's over really, isn't it? Isn't the legacy of devolution, that what it has done is it's woken up the people of England to the rather unfair settlement they get, which is that Scotland, thanks to the great Barnett formula, gets lots more money per head than England. There are really deprived areas of London who need much more money, and you see relatively affluent areas of Scotland getting much, much more money. I think it's £1,500 a head per year.
It's not over. We can keep it if we want it, and we won't keep it if we don't. There are majorities for being British in England, in Scotland, in Wales. You can be English and British. That was always the case. But we've got to make that argument, and we've got to decide then how to deal with the question of England within that, which is a question for the English. People don't want an English Parliament. They do have questions of fairness, and we've got to deal with them.
But the point is, Polly, that Scotland's position in the United Kingdom is not a matter for the people of Northern Ireland, Wales or England. It's a matter for the people of Scotland. And don't they have a habit of sort of moaning to London? London runs scared, sends more money to them, scares us with the idea of an independent Scotland, but always comes crying back to London in the end.
Well, we'd see how the campaign goes. It would be interesting. It'll be interesting if you get the Welsh and Northern Irish also campaigning in Scotland to say, let's stay together, and a real sense of what the union is for. We take it for granted at the moment, and all this talk of Britishness has seemed extraordinarily vapid. Suddenly, it really becomes to mean something, and I think people will feel quite strongly about the idea of Scotland being completely independent. And, of course, we would need a PR system for an English Parliament. Otherwise, we have a one-party state.
Good indeed. Well, let me just go around the table and ask you, starting with you, Julian, in 20 years' time, will the United Kingdom still have the four constituent members it's got now?
The answer is I don't know, but I would suspect Scotland will be independent.
Sundar?
No, I think we'll keep it. I mean, whether in 50 or 100 years, I certainly think we'll have it in 20 years.
Polly?
I think they'll stay this time round, but Sundar says maybe not indefinitely.
Great. Well, thank you for that. That's it from this week's edition of Politics Weekly. Thanks to all my guests, the Fabian Society General Secretary Sundar Kapwala, the Guardian columnist Polly Toynbee, and the Guardian's chief leader writer Julian Glover. Politics Weekly was produced by Francesca Panetta. I'm Nick Watt. Join us again next week. Till then, goodbye.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.